Welcome to Locked On Knicks. I'm your host, Alex Wolf. I'm joined by Gavin Shaw, as per usual. And we're joined by a very special guest today. We got Ashwin Ramnath of Posting and Toasting, my site. So that is pretty cool. We're discussing a piece that he wrote in this first part of what turned into a two-parter about the midway point of the Knicks season, because we're 41 games in at this point. So Schwinn wrote something about six things David Fizdale can improve upon at the season's halfway mark. And we first get into finding a better starting lineup for the Knicks.
And then we talk about the potential of a Frank Ntilikina, Emmanuel Mudiay backcourt in that starting lineup, how the two can play off each other, and what it would mean for Frank's development to play off the ball in a significant way.
And then lastly, we finish up with a little discussion about Noah Vonleh and Luke Kornet and how their roles could potentially change to better fit their skill sets. All that and more coming up right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fizdale pokes his fist.
Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious, like.
To Trier. Trier drives. Down.
All right, welcome in to Locked On Knicks, and we're joined by a very special guest today. We got Ashwin Ramnath. You may know him as @Schwinnypoo on Twitter. You might just know him as Schwinn if you're friendly with him, like me. We're best friends. you may know him as, I don't know, what's another nickname? Do you have another AKA?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Pretty sure that's it. Yeah, just Schwinn. Schwinn, yeah, Schwinn.
Schwinny poo poo.
Could add another poo, yeah. Could add another poo to it.
That's your Bootier equivalent?
Yes, okay. That is.
Except for like, that's like your good equivalent though, being Schwinny poo. I guess Schwinny poo poo would be your Bootier.
Yeah, you added
an extra
there, so that seemed like a negative connotation. I don't know. I'm just trying to get off context.
Right. The extra poo is a derogatory nickname.
Right. At that point, you're fighting.
People never call me that to my face.
I always think of it more like a pet name, like my little Schwinny Poo Poo. No?
No. We're
starting. All right. Fine. Let's get into the damn show. I'll stop embarrassing myself. All right. So, Schwinn, you wrote a sweet piece on Posting and Toasting today, which you must have had a fantastic editor help you with this one, because it really looks fine-tuned. It looks like it was really, really edited well.
Yeah, the writing's fine. Microsoft Word helped me a lot. Microsoft Word really helped me.
If you can't tell, I helped edit this piece. I played a part in this. So tell us a little bit. It's about six things that David Fizdale can improve upon at the season's halfway mark, seeing as we just crossed over that plateau the other night against the Warriors. What a way to do it, getting their asses handed to them by like 30 points and having Clay Thompson drop 43 or whatever points it was on their dome. So tell me a little bit about maybe your first thing that you want Fizdale to work on going into this second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I think I put six things, but it could have been like 12 things. It just, I was writing it. After six, I was like, all right, this is 1,400 words. I think that's probably enough for now. But the first one was just find a better starting lineup. And like, I don't know. I just think that's really basic that he should do that. And I don't know why he hasn't. Like, I guess it's so weird though, because so he tried like with Hezonja, and then he went to Knox, and then he tried with Kanter, and then he went to It went to Mitch, then back to Kanter, and then, you know, now we're at Kornet. And, you know, I'm fine with that. I understand, like, you know, he needs to try. But the weirdest thing is that he has basically just stuck with Mudiay, Hardaway, and Vonleh. And like Vonleh is the only one of those three that I would say fits like any of the ethos he was preaching in, you know, leading into the season and early on the season of, you know, make quick decisions with the ball on offense and, you know, play defense, like play, try to play defense. You know, I just don't see why you don't change anything, especially because he did have a starting lineup that was much better. You know, like the starting lineup, and I agree, it's a small sample size, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. But the starting lineup with Frank, with Damian Dotson, Mitchell Robinson, Vonleh, who has been, you know, a deserved fixture in the lineup, and Tim Hardaway, that lineup was a plus 8.1 in 94 minutes. Now, like, I understand why he felt the need to switch things up, because towards the end of their run together, Frank was basically an offensive zero. And I actually, at the time when he made that move, I was fine with it. My bigger issue was I didn't know why Damian Dotson was coming out of that lineup, and I didn't know why Mitchell Robinson was taken out of the lineup. And I think the only reason was Dotson was in a shooting slump, and I actually have no idea why he took Mitchell Robinson out. Maybe he got hurt. I'm not sure.
He said it was fouling at the time. He said that he was concerned because Mitch was fouling too much.
Yeah, and I like think that's just a stupid fucking reason. Like that's a terrible reason. I just don't understand that logic. Who cares if he's fouling a lot? Like, okay, and that again, if you, I don't know if you can make wholesale changes like that consistently and learn anything. Like, what? How do we know now? Like, you know what I mean? You have to take pieces and kind of play around with pieces to get an idea of what is the actual driver of lineups, right? So like, if you take Frank out and put Moutier in that lineup, we don't even know if that lineup would look better or worse with Moutier, because he made two other changes. So like, now we're, you've changed 3/5 of the inputs, and you know, like, so you can't even determine of it. Like, there's so many different variables coming into play now. It just skews the picture. And then, like, also his logic was that we weren't winning with that lineup, but we've been way worse since then. So I know that he has to say a lot of bullshit throughout the year because that's the kind of year this is, you know, but that's the kind of, just don't say any, just say you want to see something new. That actually would have been fine. If he was like, yeah, you know, that lineup has been good, but I wanted to take a look at something else. Would anybody have, I think actually that would have come across way better than him saying like that lineup wasn't winning, so he changed it. Cause it kind of makes it, it's almost like he's saying those guys weren't good enough, so I'm going to see like if these guys are good enough, rather than, you know, just saying like, no, nah, you know, those guys were great, I just want to see another look. Just say that.
I think the idea that Fizdale is making wholesale lineup changes with the idea of being more competitive, I mean, obviously at this point that's just kind of objectively been proven wrong, because they've been horrible with almost any other lineup they try. And I kind of agree with just your ideas on methodology and how Fizdale should go about this, and how you should probably only change one guy at a time, particularly in a group like this that's been effective. Because intuitively, that group, Frank, Hardaway, Dotson, Vonleh, Robinson, that's the Knicks' most palatable defensive lineup. And obviously, it's a bad sign when that lineup coincides with one that has a rookie and 2 second-year players in it. But that's just the reality of this team. Frank, Dotson, Robinson, those are probably, I mean, long-term, definitely your 3 best defensive guys. Right now, you could even make the case already that along with Vonleh, that's your best defensive group. But if you want to shift it a little bit, like, I wouldn't mind the way he's been playing. And obviously, and I think we're going to get into this later on, like, you could look at Knox in there, and maybe Knox has to play a little bit less overall. But the way he's been playing, particularly to start games, it'd be interesting to have Knox instead of Dotson. Or if you want to make a different substitution, maybe Moutier when he's at his best instead of Frank, and then Moutier, Hardaway, Dotson, Vonleh, Robinson. Like, I don't mind the idea of going offense or defense at either the one or the three, given Frank's struggles throughout the year and Dotson's struggles, I mean, recently and at the time of that lineup change. But to shift all of it, I think was a poor decision at the time, and in retrospect, looks really bad. And I'm kind of hoping as the season goes along, he gets back to that group with maybe one shift. But there's something there that gives them a sense of competency, and I think it's just adequate defense across the board that almost no other group they played this year really has.
So what if, hear me out on this one, what if we sit down, quote-unquote, noted defensive shitbag, Tim Hardaway Jr., which is Schwinn's words out of his piece.
That's his legal middle name.
What if we sit him down? I mean, I don't think it's that crazy considering that he's dealing with the plantar fasciitis, which is kind of chronic ailment anyway.
Even otherwise, like, if you can hold Enes Kanter accountable for basically playing terrible defense twice, you can hold Tim Hardaway Jr. for basically iso-chucking excessively the last month and a half. To me, it just seems like Tim's been like, yo, fuck this. I'm just going to do whatever, and I'm also not going to try on defense at all. Like, if he's going to have that attitude, which I kind of, I don't want to say I think is fine, it's not fine, but I get how that happens over the course of the year. And sometimes maybe you, like, he needed a wake-up call in Atlanta, right? To kind of realize, like, oh, wow, like, I need to actually try on defense, and I need to be a more complete player. I think it's fine if he just benched him. And again, people take, when you say bench, they think that means, like, never play. And, like, that's not what it means. It means you leave the starting lineup and come off the bench. That's what that means. Like, just do that. If you do that, like, I think that sends a good message to the team. Like, no, everybody has to be held accountable. I think Tim is the kind of guy that would probably take that in a much better way and less dramatic way than Enes Kanter. You know, I just think that's fine. But, like, yeah, especially now that he has a documented case of plantar fasciitis, why, like, what, is there any reason? There's no reason to me to not sit him at this point. And when I say sit in this instance, because he's injured, I mean, like, just put him on IR or whatever, inactive, because he's clearly hurt. Like, you can see it now where he keeps pulling up before he gets to the rim. He's, like, really excessively trying to draw fouls all the time. And his, yeah, the pull-up jumper just needs to stop. Like, yeah.
Well, so why don't we just spill into your second point from your article here, which was your second thing on the wish list for Fizdale, which is to give Moutier and Frank some more time in the backcourt. It could, you know, presumably make sense to try this whole Frank as, you know, a two-guard wing type scenario again and put him back out there, you know, as the off-guard and have Moutier be the starting point guard, so to speak, and Frank be the starting shooting guard, so to speak. And, you know, see how that goes, because they do really have good complementary skills. You know, Moutier can create off the dribble, which sets Frank up for some spot-up opportunities. Frank can then, you know, sporadically take the ball down the court and set up the offense to give him some reps there and, you know, have Moutier operate off ball, maybe with, like, a handoff or something along those lines to get the ball back into his hands if you want to, you know, get him scoring or whatever. So it is something that could potentially work, and you could, however hurt Tim Hardaway is or not hurt or whatever, all you have to do is just say, look, like, you know, there's nothing to be gained from playing him on this injury, which is true. It's 100% true that there is nothing to be gained from playing him while he's hurt, and then just put him, you know, on the bench and maybe even sit him for a little bit, like you said, and try to get him right, to use, you know, Fizz's favorite term, get Hardaway right physically, and then bring him back at some point, maybe later in the season, or maybe just not at all. Maybe just let him heal for the whole rest of the year, because what the hell is there to play for?
I agree. Even if you don't want to start them together, just, they need to play together more, because why not? Why? Like, they've played 42 minutes together this year. Just as an example of how absurd that is, Burke and Moutier have played more minutes together than Frank and Moutier. Like, presumably, Trey Burke is in no way, shape, or form part of the future of this team. And also, presumably, based on everything Fizdale has said and done, Moutier and Frank are pieces that they're at least considering moving forward. So why would you not want to see them play together? And what's super weird about it is, I still remember when we traded for Moutier, Fizdale was on, he was on that show, what is it, The Jump or whatever, I think, on ESPN mm-hmm. at that time. Yeah. And when they made the trade, he was like, oh, I really like what the Knicks are doing. I like getting these two big guards together. You can play them together. You can, and it's, and I remember listening to that, and when he got hired, I was like, oh, I'm kind of excited to see Frank and Mudiay get minutes together. And now it's like, they will never play together. Like, they will never play together. And Frank is just a backup point guard, and Mudiay is a starting point guard, and that's it. And, like, that's so fucking uninspiring and lame. I don't even understand how we've come to that point. But, yeah, like, you know, it does make sense to play them together. Even, yes, Frank's obviously had his struggles shooting and, you know, finding consistency with his driving ability. Mudiay still can't finish at the rim. His scoring efficiency is plummeting now again, but like, he can drive to the rim. There's definitely at least, you know, theoretically their games make sense together. Whether or not they're good enough to make that a productive pairing, I don't know. I mean the safe bet would be no, right? But like, again, Mudiay Hardaway has been a terrible pairing. They've been god awful together. Mudiay Trier, basically every other backup combination has been bad. So I don't know why we just can't, like, why not try this one? I think not only offensively do their games complement each other, but Frank can defend point and Mudiay can defend two guards because he's big enough to do that. And that, like, you just have bigger players so you can switch more. And I always think that helps your defense, where you can be more interchangeable. Especially in transition, you know, like, it doesn't matter if Mudiay, in a quick dose, like, if Mudiay has to pick up a small forward, like, that's fine, because you still have Frank out there, and, like, you know, you have more pieces that can guard up or down positions. So, yeah, I would like to see more of that. Like, for me personally, the lineup I would probably just put out there would be something like, to start games, would be Mudiay, Frank, Knox, Vonleh, Mitch, whenever he's healthy, and for now it would just be Cornette. I can understand actually just sticking with Cornette and having Mitch come off the bench, because if you're starting Mudiay and Frank, your spacing's probably going to be a little jacked, especially like Vonleh at the four, who, he's like a fake good shooter. Like, yeah, his percentage is good, but teams don't really respect him out there. So yeah, like, that's fine. If you want to keep Cornette out there, cool, but take Hardaway out, have him sit until he's right, or really just don't even let him play the rest of the year, and throw Frank out there and just play, man. Like, I don't see what we have to lose from that. We might lose some games, which would be hard, but I'm not sure how. What are we doing right now? So,
yeah, I'm kind of intrigued. I guess my big question coming off of that, and maybe it doesn't matter that much in the grand scheme of things this season, but I mean, do you guys feel as if it's counterproductive for Frank's long-term development to play off the ball, or is that kind of his death? And I know that's a question that earlier in the season was kind of beaten to death, but it's one I kind of keep asking myself, and I'm frustrated by him getting hurt recently and then just getting not getting minutes and that kind of going back and forth, because I feel like since at least this season, where he's theoretically a better player, we haven't really gotten a great feel for what he can be on the ball as a point guard. And I guess him playing with Mudiay, you could argue, is counterproductive to that. You could also make the other argument that if he's not good enough to beat out Emmanuel Mudiay, even at 19, I mean, like, maybe he's never going to be a starting point guard in the NBA, which I think would be a little premature, but I can kind of see both sides of that. So I guess I'd posit that to both of you, and I'm interested to hear what you both think on that.
I mean, personally, I'd say that, like, I don't really care if Frank ends up playing shooting guard, small forward, fucking power forward. It doesn't really matter to me what Frank ends up playing. I just want him to become a good NBA player. I think obviously the most valuable position that he could play would be point guard. And I definitely think, he for sure deserves a shot to play with an actual legitimate pick and roll threat, i.e. Porzingis, because that was definitely where he looked the best last year, was his minutes with Porzingis. But I mean, if you put him out there right now, he's clearly dealing with some shit, like, you know, in his head, you know, of dealing with confidence issues and things of that nature. And At least it seems that way based off how he's kind of carrying himself lately and how he's been on the court. So if you put him out there and he's at, you know, like I said, it's like quote unquote the shooting guard, but you kind of pass responsibility to bring the ball up the court between him and Moutier and let them kind of be a safety blanket for one another. I don't think that's counterproductive to his development. I think that's just kind of, you're kind of like hedging almost, you know, like you're giving him some experience in both respects of let him bring up the ball sometimes and other times let him learn these valuable off-ball skills that if he winds up not being a point guard long-term will help him as like a 3-and-D type player or, you know, maybe even better yet as a player that's kind of the Andre Iguodala mold or something like that, you know, that occasionally brings the ball up the floor, but, you know, is mostly an off-ball type player. But that's just how I look at it.
Yeah. I think that, one, again, coming into the season, all we heard was there's no point guards. I just have guards. Everybody can run point. And now it's like we only have dedicated point guards. So that's bullshit. Second is I think Frank's ultimate, like his ideal ceiling, when you said is that he's a point guard, yes, obviously, like if he can run point himself, that's awesome. But for the time being, while his handle is kind of, it's better this, it actually, it's, I think it's pretty considerably better, but it's still subpar for a point guard, and that's fine. Like we knew that coming in, he was going to take 2-3 years to maybe get up to speed offensively. But like while he's developing, the thing is you don't want to lose what he gives you in terms of the ability to defend every position with somebody that's 6'6" and up, right? Like that's something most teams don't have. And even so, like when you play him with Moutier, you're still at least benefiting from his ceiling defensively, even if he's not close to where you hope he becomes offensively. And yeah, like Alex said, I don't think it's that. I think in the very limited minutes I have seen them together over the last couple of years, I think that they have shown, like Moutier to me, right, when he's out there with Burke, it always feels like Burke is the point guard and Frank is spotting up or playing off the ball entirely. When he plays in the very limited minutes I've seen him with Moutier, it feels way more like a timeshare where like sometimes Frank will bring the ball up and sometimes Moutier will bring the ball up. And I think Frank even said in that Ringer piece or whatever, he said Moutier is like a big brother to him, which is something he has never said about. I don't know if he said that about anybody else on the team ever, to be honest. Maybe I think he said it about Noah once too. So like maybe like speaking French is the key, but yeah, like I don't know. They strike me both as pretty nice young men. Like they seem to get along well off the floor. They have skill sets that theoretically make sense together. They both have good size. Like I don't see why you would not at least give it a good shot, considering the other shitty combinations we've been subjected to throughout the year.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that should wrap up our first segment here, but we're going to come back. We'll talk more about what we want to see in the second half of the season from the Knicks and recap a little more about what we've seen in this first half when we come back to Locked On Knicks.
You are back on Locked On Knicks. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf with Ashwin Ramnath, whose name I hopefully didn't just butcher, but we are excited to get into it. Ashwin, you wrote really an excellent article, I think, summing up what we can look forward to in the second half of the next season if David Fizdale shares your brain. And I think there are a lot of good suggestions in here. So hopefully he does. We just kind of talked about the possibilities of an Emmanuel Moutier, Frank Ntilikina backcourt. I was kind of interested in your idea of using Noah Vonleh as more of a role man and Luke Kornet is more of a spot up shooter. Because I think you make the astute observation that Kornet, when he sets a pick, it's almost inessential. It's kind of just a functional action that you take in an offense, but it doesn't necessarily do anything because he's not particularly enthusiastic or built for it. And I've also kind of wondered how Noah Vonleh would do in terms of vertical spacing. It's kind of been a buzzword around the NBA over the last couple of years. I know with the Nets, it's something that Jared Allen has provided in spades, and it is a legitimate form of floor spacing. And if the Knicks do end up putting out a lineup featuring Moutier and Ntilikina, you kind of need, I guess, another mechanism to generate floor spacing. And having someone rolling to the rim who is kind of a vertical lob threat, and I guess you can debate whether or not Vonleh's that, as someone who's physically not that big but is a very good jumper, I guess all that kind of intrigues me. And it's something we haven't really seen this season. So I'd be interested to hear kind of more thoughts from you on that and how that could potentially help the Knicks offense.
Yeah. So this kind of just stemmed. This section went from being like, I was going to show how our spacing just sucks a lot of times. Sometimes because our personnel, but other times just it looks almost like these guys don't have any idea where they should be. I'm really mad because there was this one play where I had like, it was like Cantor's posting up, and then for no reason at all, Hezonja just like cuts to the free throw line, but like Knox is spotting up basically directly behind him, but you know, like a normal spot up behind the 3-point line, but Hezonja just like stands there and watches Cantor post up. So I'm really upset I wasn't able to, but yeah, like when it comes to Vonleh's role man, Cornette as spot up shooter, I just think that would create more space than Cornette as the, you know, kind of the role slash pop man, because, you know, like basically, right, when you're running this high pick and roll, you want to spread the floor with three other shooters, right? So like Vonleh, again, like I mentioned before, he's a fake good shooter right now. Like teams don't respect him out there. He doesn't have any gravity out there. Even when you watch it, like how many times a game do you think Vonleh catches the ball and could put up a three but has the worst, like the world's worst pump fake? And he must have learned it from Moutier. I think him and Moutier pump fake more than any of the two guys in the entire NBA, and they both lead to nothing. So like, I think reversing them, and as you touched upon vertical spacing, like Vonleh being an elite athlete and Cornette being a good shooter and definitely not an elite athlete, reversing their roles, I think is something we should definitely try more of. And like we kind of do sometimes when Moutier will get the ball back and he runs a dribble handoff with Vonleh at the top of the key. I would just like to see more straight spread pick and roll than we already run, just coming down the floor initially. And I would like Vonleh to be the role man a little bit more than Cornette, just because, like I said, I think, you know, Cornette, at this point, it does seem like teams respect, at least they know that they kind of have to worry about him a little bit out there. And you know, like Hardaway, even though his percentage isn't great, teams obviously don't ignore him. And then Knox, I think he's shooting like 35.5% from three. So he's not, you know, he's shooting pretty well enough for a rookie that teams obviously don't entirely ignore him. I would like to see that for sure. And I think like Moutier has shown he's pretty good about making pocket passes. I know Frank is pretty good about hitting the pocket pass. I don't care about Trey Burke. So yeah, like, I guess, yeah, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. Just when it comes to spacing, I think it's way better than the opposite.
Yeah, and I think it could also potentially lead into some quicker hitting mechanisms offensively. And I think that that's kind of an issue across the team, just guys making quicker decisions on the offensive end of the floor. And I know right now, at least the way Vonleh operates, like so many of his possessions end in kind of either those open threes or grinding post-ups that are fine and like sometimes functional, and like there's not always a lot else going on in the Knicks offense. But I like the idea of him getting it on the roll and kind of, I mean, especially if you think he's going to be a long-term piece on this team and he's someone the Knicks could resign and he could be a rotation guy when they're actually competing for a playoff spot. I think just such a big thing for him is improving his ability to pass and kind of instantaneously, because I think he is a good passer in some ways and he does put good speed on the ball when he does choose to pass. But if he can get his mind, I guess, up to the point of his physicality and become a passer on those short roll situations, I think it could do a lot for speeding up the Knicks offense and maybe even make them kind of artificially more effective, even though they really lack a lot of talent on that end.
Yeah. And you know, just to add one more little wrinkle to this, I feel like I look at so many things through this lens at this point, because I'm just like, it's probably just because I'm like really, really dying to get Porzingis back. But like with most things with Cornette, you can get sort of like a bargain bin feel for how things will look with Porzingis out there potentially. And like, since Vonleh is a guy that I think the three of us, at least, you know, talking here right now, agree is someone that could potentially fit very well with Porzingis, you want to maybe start running Vonleh in scenarios similar to what you might do when Porzingis is back. And it would be nice, I mean, honestly, with how good Porzingis' stroke is, to keep him on the perimeter sometimes, give him a little rest on offense, instead of him having to be the one getting the ball, you know, in his hands and having to create or do his, you know, his post-ups or setting the screen himself. It could be good once he gets back to kind of work a little bit of a spot-up game into his game anyway. So it could be nice with running Vonleh like this now to kind of get a preview of what it could potentially be like if Vonleh gets to play with Porzingis maybe later this year and hopefully next year and beyond.
Well, like, and also, I have no idea. I could never track this, but and I'm pretty sure they don't track it. I don't know. But one thing is, I would imagine that I think Vonleh is like the only guy on our team that picks up moving screens. I think Mitch actually has a little bit too, but his is more because he's doing like his little like bullshit kind of hip check screen because he's scared about using his body. But like Vonleh is the only guy that picks up actual moving screens because he's trying to like lay the wood on guys. Cornette and Ennis aren't even making contact on their screens. And this seems like a very nerdy thing to harp upon, but it matters because if you watch so many of our sets, it is like we run this double screen thing all the time at the top of the key. And I don't remember the last time anybody even made contact on one of those screens. It's like, I don't know if that's a coaching thing. I don't know if it's these guys that are just not kind of comfortable making like that. You know, it takes a toll on your body. I understand. So like a lot of times we see that with Porzingis even where like he kind of doesn't really lean into a screen. And then you compare that to, you know, say Robin Lopez or Kylo Quinn, and it's a massive difference. Or Vonleh even. And so I would like to see more of it with Vonleh because again, like he actually sets the screen. But in general, we really, really need our bigs to be better and more precise about screening instead of whatever it is that they're doing now, especially Ennis, who seems way more interested in making sure he gets very good, excellent deep post position to clog up any driving lanes and or offensive rebounding position.
Yeah. Well, I think we've pretty much covered that topic, and at the risk of going too long here. Whoa. All right, we're done. That's we're starting to run a little long here. So we initially recorded this all in one go, but we're not going to give you guys all the art all at once here. We're going to split this into two parts since Ashwin was so kind as to give us so much of his time.
Yeah, we went about an hour, and we were considering just dropping that, but you guys are gluttonous as is. You just can't get enough of this podcast. You are consuming it to the point of I would call it unhealthy, frankly. So we're going to cut off the podcast here. We're going to do you guys a little bit of good. You know what? Get outside, maybe see the sun a little bit. If you're already running while you're listening to this podcast, maybe go in, play some video games, or do something social, talk to someone. Get those headphones out of your ears. We'll be back next with more Locked On Knicks on Saturday morning, recapping the game, and then we'll get to the second part of this one on Sunday. Hopefully you've made a little something out of your life by then. I don't know. It would be cool.